The Endurance Asia Podcast.
Yo, pick your red up cause things ain't that bad. Maybe you should switch the target that you're aiming at. Believe perfection is a beast that they'll never catch. So never waste another day because life moves so fast. And a dream without pursuing, yo, they never last. Another shadow of regret I've tried to never cast. And always tell a truthful story if they ever ask. Stop the complaining because things ain't that bad.
Welcome to the latest episode of the Endurance Asia Podcast. And this week we are joined by none other than Mr. Jeff Campbell, winner of the 2024 Endurance Asia Awards, Male Athlete of the Year. So good to catch up with him in person. Credible athlete, a really hard trainer, someone that's truly dedicated to the sport whilst juggling busy career and like personal family life. True inspiration as an athlete in his 40s that's really at the top of his game. So really enjoyed the chat. So many things to learn and to take inspiration from in this talk. We catch up after with Mr. Chris Timms, comes and joins to talk about what he's been up to and some plans ahead. We're running the Seoul Marathon in a few weeks together, and I'm sure we'll get to cover that there. We're both testing our mettle on the road. We actually talked to Jeff about this as well, to think about how running roads can parlay into running trails and make you an all-round better runner. So with that, I'm going to kick off with Mr. Jeff Campbell.
Tell the truthful story if they ever ask. Stop the complaining because things ain't that bad.
Mr. Jeff Campbell, welcome back onto the Endurance Asia Podcast. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Scott. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, got you in sunny Singapore. Last time we met was at the Asia Trailmaster Finals, where we got you on the podcast then. You had an absolute epic day. And we just recently gave you Endurance Asia Male Athlete of the Year as well. So congratulations, sir. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, it was a huge honor, a really big surprise to get that award. But I've always been a huge fan of the podcast and so many other great athletes that were under consideration. So, yeah, really, really proud of that. And thanks to you and the team.
Yeah, well, since you came on, you went up and you're in Vietnam, actually. You were with Chris Timms and you got a race in up at the end of the year in Vietnam. And how's the year kicked off for you so far?
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, so after the ATM finals, I had a couple of races in Hong Kong, had Moon Trekker and OTW.
Oh, that's right.
And then got back on the ATM circuit with the Pren Trail in Da Lat, so in the highlands of Vietnam. And that was a really, really cool race. We had Chris Timms there, and Bin, one of the Vietnamese elites, really sort of hammering the pace. And I'd never raced in that part of Vietnam. I've raced up north a few times. So it was just, one of the great things about the sport is it just taking you to new places and some really beautiful trails down in that part of Vietnam.
We talk about it a lot, but Vietnam's, I think, my favorite place to run. Like, it's just, especially around the Da Lat area where you are, pine tree forest, and it's just absolutely stunning around there. You're actually off to Laos this weekend as well, right?
That's right. Yeah, I'm here in Singapore this week just for some work stuff, and then going to be doing the V Trail 55K in Laos in Vang Vieng. That's on Saturday morning, so should be a great race. Never been to Laos before. Alessandro Sherpa is already there checking out the course, so
he's cutting the trails for
you.
Oh
yeah, like, and he's always such a strong competitor, so it'll be nice to have a bit of a shootout in the jungle down in Laos. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, that'll be cool. Well, look, I was really keen to get you on because I think you've got both an inspiring and impressive like backstory of how you got into ultra running. So when you were on the podcast last time, we were kind of talking about the Asia Trailmaster, but I want to hear a bit more about the genesis of Jeff. How did it come to be? Because you're the same age as me, like 42.
42. That's
Yeah. Same as Chris Timms. We're all 42 years old. We're like in the latter stages of our endurance careers.
Speak for yourself, Scott.
Well, so I'm really and I think when the first time we met like properly in person was at Vietnam Mountain Marathon, and
yeah.
and you shared the story then about how you came into Ultram. But like, I'd love for you to share with the audience, how it came to be.
Yeah, so I'm a Canadian and grew up in Canada and never really participated in any endurance sports growing up. Played ice hockey and baseball and sort of the standard, team sports. But no cycling, no swimming, no running at all. And then in my early 30s, 32, my wife is Hong Kongese Canadian. So we decided to move to this part of the world and arrived in Hong Kong in 2014. Didn't know a soul there. So my wife had left the city when she was 12 years old. So in the course of trying to find some old friends she went to kindergarten with, it just so happened that one of her friends was the spouse of John Ellis, who's a very well-known trail runner in Hong Kong and in Asia. And he basically encouraged me to go out for a hike with him. And then he gave me a bib for a 5K race in Hong Kong. And I very reluctantly ran under his bib for a 5K and did okay, and one thing turned into another. I was soon doing King of the Hills half marathons and a road half marathon and then a full marathon, and just in a matter of months I was starting to lose some weight, gain a little bit of speed, still scratching the podium or anything, but seeing my body start to transform a little bit. And the Hong Kong running scene is such a great way to meet friends. So many races going on. Before I knew it, I was kind of getting close to some podiums, and sort of one thing led to another, and I was a competitive trail runner.
Yeah. That first 5K race, because I remember, I mean, in Hong Kong, what do you do? It's like, I think when you're saying you went out to dinner with him and his wife, and it's like, oh, what do you do in Hong Kong? So you can either go out, get drunk, get smashed,
correct,
and end up in Wan Chai or Lan Kwai Fong, or you can go and hike and head out into the hills. It's like, what are the two options?
And I had no idea that Hong Kong had these amazing mountains that you could run around in. I knew that they were there. When you fly into the city, you can see these big, beautiful green mountains. But I just thought of Hong Kong as skyscrapers and hyper urban density. No idea that it was sort of such a natural, outdoors paradise. And it's really one of the things that keeps me in the city. I couldn't imagine, living and training anywhere as convenient as Hong Kong.
Yeah. And so you got that first 5K race. What did you, do you remember what you actually did time-wise?
It was on Wan Chai Gap. So it was the AVOHK series, so a really hilly 5K.
Yeah.
I think I ran 21 and a half minutes, something like that.
So in a hilly 5K, that's impressive.
It wasn't too fast, but I didn't know what a good or a bad 5K time was. I really had no idea about running whatsoever. And John said, hey, that's not a bad time. I think you made it in like the top five of his age category or something. As I said, one thing turned into another, and then you just get sucked into the scene, and so many great places to race and train in Hong Kong that I was hooked.
Well, I remember you showing me a before and after photo, and it was almost like one of those Subway ads. Like this big fat guy, and then that's probably. But you were carrying a bit when you came to Hong Kong.
Absolutely,
as well.
Yeah, and that was one of the interesting things personally about transitioning into being a runner was there was a body transformation aspect, right? Training is a process of, forcing your body to adapt physiologically. And watching that sort of transformation from going couch to 5K to marathon to the ultra distances and doing it quite quickly, my body was changing before my eyes, and I was just sort of feeling healthier and unlocking these new capabilities. So that to me was a really sort of motivating part of the process. Lost a lot of weight. In fact, one of the interesting things was because I was never a runner in Canada, and I got into it so quickly in Hong Kong, is that most Hong Kong friends just thought that I'd always ran, and my Canadian friends all of a sudden were seeing these pictures of me on Facebook having lost a bunch of kilos and running these races. What's going on, Jeff? Like, this is a pretty abrupt change, right? So it was just a brand new chapter almost as soon as I got off the plane.
Yeah, it's quite addictive, isn't it? When you feel like start feeling better and you're in like early 30s, so it's quite a late start into kind of competitive sport.
Yeah.
And literally every time you go out for a run, you're kind of PBing and just getting like seeing improvements every time, which is like the dopamine effect of that is actually does almost just really kind of reinforces it and makes you train harder. And
absolutely. And to me, that sort of project management of the sport and of training, you know, putting in, you know, the inputs and then seeing what comes out of that and then fine tuning that machine. And you know, early on, the gains are so easy, right? As long as you're just getting out the door, you're going to get better. So that is a huge motivation. And then as you get more sort of mature into the sport, it becomes harder to squeeze out those extra few minutes or seconds, in terms of performance. But that almost just makes the puzzle more sort of fascinating, you know.
Yeah.
And you put age into that, and
you're a lawyer by trade, right?
That's right.
And so, do you think that actually the mentality of like all the study and everything you have to go to, the dedication and everything there, actually was parlayed into the focus on training, or do you think there's a correlation?
I think it does for me. Runners come in all sort of shapes and sizes and backgrounds.
I think Andre always says from either the barrister or the barista, like
And that's another thing that I really love about the community is it brings people from all different types of backgrounds. But for me, that absolutely affects how I approach the sport. I try to be a little bit methodical about training and race preparation, even planning race calendars and. I want to get things right. I have really great running friends who are sort of do it more by feel and maybe a less structured approach. And I think it works differently for different athletes and different people. But I absolutely love the sort of the planning and the process of it all. The actual running can be a bit of a pain sometimes. You don't always want to go out and bust your rear on a day where you have too many other things going on, but it's part of the process, right? And to me, not deviating from that process, it's like having a box that isn't ticked. You want to clear the inbox. You want to get everything that you need to do in terms of your running preparation sort of done.
Yeah. When did you realize that your VO2 max was so high? I think most people, they either look at their Garmin watch and the data is just completely irrelevant on there. But I think that you actually thought, when did you think about getting yourself checked out to see if you did have that kind of like genetic ability as well?
Yeah, so that was just really good fortune in terms of the setup I fell into in Hong Kong. So after I had been just running on my own, sort of these shorter races, for maybe 6 or 8 months, started to have a few podiums in very small races in Hong Kong. And John and a few other friends were starting this running shop called Gone Running in Hong Kong. And they wanted to create a really cool trail running shop. And together with a physio sports clinic called Joint Dynamics, they decided to create a Gone Running Joint Dynamics elite team. And they asked me if I wanted to be one of the sponsored athletes. And I said, I'm not an athlete. I'm just I haven't been running for barely a year yet, or not even. But they said, no, you got some potential. Join the team. And one of the benefits of the team was Joint Dynamics had all this really cool sort of physio, sports science stuff. So they had like bod pods for body fat and gait analysis with the slow-mo cameras and sensors on the treadmill.
Yeah.
And they had the VO2 testing, so the VO2 max testing. So you basically get on a treadmill with the Top Gun oxygen mask, and it's a run to exhaustion test. So I did that at Joint Dynamics. I think it must have been in 2015, so about a year into running.
Wow.
And I blew, I think it was 77 or 78. It was the highest that they had recorded, and when that happened, Dave Jacquier from Joint Dynamics said, "Oh wow, like I have a little project here. So Jeff, quit your job, and we could make something of this." I said, "Dave, yeah, I got a career separate for running. I know this is exciting for you, but at that point we knew that we had something to play with, and that I sort of had an undiscovered sort of level of aerobic ability that meant that my ceiling was pretty high. I later did a few more sort of VO2 maxes and got into the 80s. It's probably degraded a little bit with age since then. But that to me also gave a bit of a motivation, in that, you know, at that point I'm in my early mid 30s. I knew that I didn't have, you know, 15, 20 years of elite competition window, and it's like, okay, so what do I want to do with this? You know, do I want to focus on short trail, on longer stuff, on roads? And I appreciated that there was some potential in terms of doing some interesting things, and really about sort of prioritizing and figuring out what the goals were going to be at that point.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating, because I think about when I was younger, I was the one that like avoided sports day. Like, oh, I forgot my kit for a PE day. It's like, oh, okay, I'll sit there and do lines instead, kind of thing. And it was just, I'd like mentally told myself, oh, you're just not a runner.
Yep.
Like, I played soccer I played football, and I was like a goalkeeper because I couldn't run. And I think it's like that mental talk of actually telling yourself you can't do it. And I, you know, you get the question, oh, like, what would you go back and tell your younger self?
Yeah.
And I think like that is one thing, like not to limit yourself with what you perceive yourself to be. And but doing a test like that, it's like, oh, wait a second. Actually, there's like pure data telling me that I do have this innate ability that I can then kind of take advantage of, and then build around that. And it sounds like the team at Joint Dynamics are like, right, okay, let's get him. And at that point, did you start getting coached by Andy Dubois, or was that
would have been probably another year later? So John was the one who encouraged me after starting to have some successful results, time to get a coach. And at that point I was surrounded with just a wealth of knowledge in terms of the other elite trail runners in the Hong Kong community. So, you know, the Jeremy Ritzies, the Stone Sangs, all of these guys, you know, I was watching what they were doing. And I knew what I needed to do to sort of, you know, mimic that type of elite type of training, the volume, the workouts. And my training was not structured at that point. I was still kind of throwing spaghetti at the wall. And at that stage of my running development, as long as I was out running, I was still getting better. So I still felt there was enough low-hanging fruit for me to continue pulling. But then finally I relented. I said, okay, fine, let's bring Andy aboard. And that was about 8 years ago, and he's been my coach ever since. He is just fully part of the team, you know.
Yeah.
So I could probably drop my own training plans at this point, but that's not how I use Andy. Obviously he still does, you know, give me training plans and sort of reviews my workouts, but it's also just lots of checking in terms of how the body is feeling and race tactics, and a lot of just having that sort of sober second thought. You never want to be your own doctor or your own lawyer. So having a coach basically means someone, you have the angel or the devil on your shoulder sort of at the appropriate times.
Yeah. I'd like to dig in that a little bit more. One quick question first. When you all did the VO2 max test, out of the stable of gone running Joint Dynamics team, like, who else was in a higher VO2 max? Who had really low? Throw him under the bus. What was John Ellison?
I think John is in the high 50s, low 60s. I can't remember everyone's off the top of my head, but it was pretty funny back in the day, especially before COVID. The team would just be in joint dynamics all the time, doing strength training together. It wasn't so much the VO2 max test that got people teasing each other, but it was the bod pod, the body fat test.
Percentage. Yeah,
because every once in a while, the joint dynamics team would say, "Okay, all the runners, you know, it's body fat testing time," and yeah, there'd be a few guys who might have to cut off the beers for a few weeks after.
I can imagine John doing like getting in the sauna for 3 days beforehand, having like, oh yeah.
yeah. But to me, that that sort of running tech and all of the sport science stuff, that was just another sort of really cool aspect of the sport that I love to dive into.
Did they do like lactate threshold and metabolic efficiency, like fuel efficiency?
All of it.
It's really good stuff. It's really actually interesting to do, to kind of understand your training zones and stuff. It can plug nicely into that.
I mean
VO2 max in itself is a bit of like a vanity test, really, isn't it?
I think that's right. It's to me, they're just data points. It's how you use them, but it's still interesting to have all that data and just play with it as you like.
And I'm interested with the Joint Dynamics Gone Running team. Like, how has that actually impacted you being part of the team? Like, because I mean, you say you've got Andy as your coach, and you could probably just do it one-on-one, but what, as being part of Joint Dynamics, how has that actually made you a better athlete as well?
Yeah, so it's basically having a stable of support around you for different needs and different tasks, right? So Andy is my running coach. He is the sort of expert in terms of how to prepare for specific races. He can look at sort of power outputs during workouts and races, and you know, decide whether you need more load, less load, and even a little bit in terms of, just because he's worked with so many athletes for a long time, how maybe different niggles and injuries, what you can sort of train through. The joint dynamics part of the team is strength and conditioning. So we do a weekly strength and conditioning session with them, and also for all of the recovery, physiotherapy. You know, as runners, we get injured. So, you know, I've had some smaller injuries, some bigger injuries. And whenever that happens, you know, preventative maintenance is important, but sometimes you just need to do sort of some big rehab, massages before races and for recovery. So it's you know, they are sort of part of the strength and also sort of wellness side of the team. And then also the Gone Running side, which, you know, it's a running shop, so they have all the other stuff that you need in terms of gear and stuff. So,
and nutrition and stuff.
Yeah, so it was just... It was such a helpful kind of mix to be just thrown into, because it sort of had everything that I needed. And, you know, I've had a few other sort of sponsors, you know, coming in and out over the years, but JD and Gone Running have been sort of the mainstays. And it also just helps that these people are also my friends, and you know, they are sort of running confidants, and it's just nice to have that community aspect as well.
And when it comes to strength and conditioning, like how many days a week are you doing what, and then what kind of what kind of circuits are you doing?
Usually one night a week, we'll do an hour session, and it's just a bit of everything. Some weights, some circuit training, some core work, and it's helpful. You know, if you can get a little bit of that strength work in once a week, it's going to help round out your sort of your stability, maybe give you a little bit of extra power. I I do have a full-time job, and I'm a high-volume runner, so I like to get out and put in a lot of mileage. So at the end of the day, I don't have too many spare hours in the week. But I think that you probably get a lot of bang for your buck for that first hour, and maybe some diminishing returns after that. So for me, if I can get an hour a week in, it's
great. An hour. And then when you strength stuff, are you lifting like heavy, or is it kind of just doing lots of like split leg, split squat stuff, like lunges to like mimic running style, or are you?
Probably more now plyometric stuff and a lot of split squats. We used to do a little bit more of the heavy stuff, but the team seems to be moving a little bit more towards sort of the explosive stuff and the circuit training these days.
One thing that has also come out of the team is that. And for most people that have like started running in Hong Kong, Oxfam Trail Walker is kind of like the genesis for a lot of people getting into trail running. Yeah. I mean, it was for me. It was for so many people I've spoken to. It was the first thing they were like. You know, I think like people like Nick Timworth, the legend was a big sort of proponent of the trail running scene. And his first was getting into Oxfam Trail Walker. But it's an incredible team event, but it really fits in when you've got like a running group, running team, running squad to actually have a team every year. And it's become a big race for you as well, right?
Yeah, so Oxfam has always been a special place on the annual calendar for me in Hong Kong. When I first arrived in the city, I was started off doing really short distance races, like
the
10, 15, max 20K kind of races. And Trail Walker was just this 100K beast that I knew I wasn't ready for in those early days. But because it was such a big, you know, event for the running community, right from the first year, I was a support runner for one of the teams. So I got hooked into a team with Dweefer Evans and Andrew Dawson, some of the old sort of classic Hong Kong trail runners. And I helped run the last 20K, sort of from Lead Mine Pass to the finish line.
Along the reservoir.
Over Time O'Shan and then along the reservoir. And then that just became a sort of an annual sort of routine, is I would pay some team for the last 20, 30 kilometers of the race. And I did that for maybe 4 years. And then by that point, I had sort of gone into the longer distances, 50, 70Ks. And then I think it was 2018 that I said, okay, I'm finally going to give it a crack. And myself, John Ellis, Michael Skobierski, and Brian McFlynn gave it a crack. And we did the full 100. So that was my first 100K.
That was your very first 100K.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
and that was the year that you that the Nepalese were like winning quite convincingly, and then like classic John Ellis pacing.
Yeah,
you just like were like, it's all right, let them go, and then was it last 30K or something, or like you just put that absolute hammer down?
Well, they probably were out about 30 minutes ahead of us at one point during the race, a huge lead very early on, and then. And throughout the day, each checkpoint, we were told, oh, you've just gained 2 minutes on them, 3 minutes on them. So each 10K, we were just shaving off little bits of that lead. And then when we got to the final checkpoint, 10K to go, we were 2 minutes behind. And we passed them at around the 94K mark. And it was, that was probably one of the most special, if not the most special finishes. My first 100K win, Trail Walker, such a big race in Hong Kong, to beat the Nepalese. I mean, the history of the Trail Walker event, it was a training race for the Gurkha soldiers. So the Nepalese, they're fighting for pride there. It's just turned into a really special race for me personally.
And I think that year it was just over 12 hours or something. It was around the 12 hours.
That was about 11:53.
Just under.
Yeah.
And Yeah, I must have been really interesting being, I mean, because John's obviously a really good mate of yours.
Yeah.
But he is renowned for this incredible ability to both pace, to like go out in like a really measured pace.
Yeah.
But then also to absolutely bury himself, like yeah. I mean, you say that his VO2 max might only be like early 60s, yeah. late 50s, but I think that that guy can absolutely bury himself like no other person.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
What's it like running with people like that? You learn from as part of a team. Like
yeah.
That?
So his sort of standard tactics of going out really, really slow and then you know, finishing strong. It's really well suited for a format like Trail Walker, where it's a team of four. All four runners have to get across the finish line together. It's not cumulative time. You need to go through each checkpoint and the finish line together. So if you break one of those four athletes, the whole team is done. So it really favors a conservative pacing strategy. And for every time I've run the event, we've tried, and a few of those have been without John. We've really tried to have that same that same pacing strategy of going out really, really under control, and then having a lot in the tank for the second half, where you can really, really squeeze everything out of all the runners.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you've run it four times now, right? Have you guys won every single year that you've run?
Yeah, I'm 4 for 4 right now. Ran it a second time with John Masashirataki and Ryan Whelan. And then we did the mixed team with the legends Esther Sislag and Fu Zhao,
yeah.
And Ryan. And then this past year did it with a bit of a new cohort with Alex Nehrink and Ludwig Riens and Ryan. Yeah. We've won all four times.
That's incredible. I mean, those three athletes that you ran with this year, they are all on incredible form, right?
Oh, yeah.
They all had smashing HK100 races as well, like Ludo, Alex.
Yeah.
And then Ryan just, he was just running down in New Zealand as well. Tarawera, he just won the 100 miler there, didn't he? Came third in 100 miler, which really competitive.
Unbelievable performance. Yeah, well, I think Trail Walker, if nothing else, it's just a contest to see who has the three fastest mates in Hong Kong. And I'm lucky to have some pretty fast mates.
But I'm interested the year that you ran with Esther and Fu Zhao, because Fu Zhao was our female athlete of the year as well for last year. Incredible. Yeah. But I'd love to hear a bit more about what it was like running with those two. Like two of the best female athletes in the world, not just in Asia.
Oh,
like they are both. They've both come second in Western States. I think it was Fu Zhao came second last year. I think Esther came second or third the year before. Like just amazing.
Yeah. So Esther is a really good mate of mine, and obviously a fantastic runner. And the plan was that year for the team to be her, Ryan, John, and myself, and then John was having some injury problems, and it came right up to our last training run as a team about 6 days before the race. We ran the last 20K, and his foot just wasn't having it, and he said, "Guys, I'm not going to be able to do the 100K. We need to find an alternate." And we 6 days out from a 100K race, and we were thinking, "Oh my God, who can run a sub 12-hour McElhose 100K on 6 day notice?" And Hong Kong 100 had just been the week before, so a lot of our mates in Hong Kong would be, you know, their legs would be toasted. So we all just went into the Rolodexes and we put together a list of potential replacements, ringers that we could bring in. And when we looked at the names on all of our lists, Esther had Fu Zhao on hers because they're
both Hoka athletes.
Yeah. And she said, "I think Fu Zhao might come if we if we invited her." And we gave her a call and. She said, "Sure." And she was
based in Shenzhen or Guangzhou? Or?
I think she was more in central China at the time. So, but flew her in, and She didn't speak too much English, so we had a translator, and but she was totally on board with the format. We were a little bit nervous because she's a world-class elite athlete, and we're used to our sort of team tactics, and we had a well-oiled sort of trail walker machine by that point. And slotting someone brand new, you know, if you have a bit of a prima donna, will that affect the team dynamics? And she was so easy and then strong as, right?
Yeah, I mean,
you don't have to worry about her falling behind. And we had a fantastic race that year. So it was just such a special experience to be racing with two of the most elite sort of ladies in the world, just on your trail walker team.
But, yeah, it's so cool. It's so cool to see. And and I remember like following that year, and just she's like a pocket rocket as well, isn't she?
Yeah.
She's so small but so incredibly fast on the trails. Like, what was the dynamic between the four of you? Because normally when you do a mixed team, it's like you'll have one female and like, but how? Because the other thing about being in a trail walker as a team event is you can tow people as well.
Yeah.
I doubt Fuzel or Esther needed towing at all in that race. In fact, it's probably the other way around, was it not?
Every trail walker is different, and because it requires four runners to cover a 100K race, statistically, someone's going to have a bad day or more than one person. That day, Ryan was just, I think, 4 weeks after the Four Trails Ultra challenge.
Oh, that's right.
He'd
had like, I mean, he put in an incredible time, he had physical issues,
So it was definitely a few weeks sort of too early for him to be at his top performance. So we got the tow rope for him out sort of after Shing Moon going up Needle Hill. But he was pretty strong in the first half. Yeah. I think it was just, 298 kilometers and the legs catching up on you. Ryan's, he's superhuman, but, it happens to anyone who puts themselves through that much mileage. It was myself, Esther, and Fu Zhao getting Ryan on the rope a couple of times in the last few hills. But we still finished strong, and we were just, I think, a minute or two over 12 hours that year, which is still a decent time.
Like, that's going to be a standing record for a mixed team for a long time.
I'd love to go back and have a crack at having a mixed team win the outright.
Yes.
So that year we finished second overall and broke the mixed team record, maybe a little bit of unfinished business there. It'd be cool to have a mixed team sort of win the overall.
Well, actually, we just had Winfie and Joe Lodder on the podcast, who won the mixed one from this past year, and like incredible run. Obviously, she just coming off four trails, I think there was like 13 and a half hours, it was 14 or so, showing that doing 12 hours is just out of this world. Very cool. It seems like, I mean, you say that Oxfam Trail Walker was the very first 100K race that you've done.
Yeah.
It seems like actually you're typically been more attuned to the slightly shorter distance. Would you say that's the case? Or would you say as you're getting older, you're starting to become a little bit more adept to the longer distance?
Yeah. So when I started off doing the trail running, I really loved the short trail kind of distances. And even the 50K was a little bit long for me. I loved the fast tactical battles of going sort of all out, hell for leather on the trails. More so than the sort of the slog of the longer distance. But when I sort of got up to the 50, 70K distance, had a few sort of good results in those races, I'd say that's probably my current sweet spot. Yeah. Can definitely go up to 100K. And as I'm getting into my 40s, that's probably where I'll have a little bit more longevity in terms of competitiveness, I would guess. Yeah. I just love the size of a 50K kind of race. It's short enough that you can race fast, long enough that it's not just a pure foot race. There's still a little bit of, you know, toughness that goes into it. It's also sort of 5-6 hours and then you're done, you know, you're not sort of broken down for a few days afterwards. So, to me, I love the variety of running. I'll race up to sort of 120, 130K races. I'll still do the shorter stuff for fun. Love a bit of road running. I'll do a bit of track racing. So, you know, to me, we only have, one running, career and, I think to limit yourself to any one distance or any one format is to lose out on a lot of the joys of the sport.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, I think that even if you feel like, because I was just looking through your record and pretty much every sort of like 30 to 50K race that you've run, albeit, I mean, some of them are probably a bit smaller races, but you've literally won every single race. And it just like, it's kind of like pretty clear that's your distance. But I think at the same time, you obviously enjoy the long stuff. I think Translantau's probably been one of the longest ones you've done, right? That's, but you haven't done a miler before.
No, not yet. I will eventually.
That's got to be ticked off. That box has got to be ticked, has it not?
Absolutely. And I think for something like a miler, I guess at least two things go into the equation. One, when I do something, I want to do it well. So, that means that I need to, have enough time to prepare for running a miler well and for recovery afterwards. But also I just need to sort of be in a, I need to be physically ready for it. So I think earlier in my career, I was quite conservative in terms of slowly building up in terms of the race distances. Cause I wanted to do well once I, started tackling those distances. But then also just planning your race calendar. If you have a miler on the calendar, a few other things will have to kind of get shifted around. So trying to squeeze in all the things on my to-do list, probably not a miler in the early part of this year, but maybe towards the end or maybe next year. Definitely the longer distances have their own sort of magic to them.
Yeah, and I suppose with that, like, it'd be interesting to hear about how you're training at the moment. Obviously, you still work with Andy to build your block.
Yeah.
One of the things we have talked about is around run commuting. It's something I always go on to Chris Timms around and like nag him around. I'm like, you just need to use that dead time as training.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you just, as people that have got family and really busy jobs, you just don't have the time to be able to fit in the training unless you're using that dead time. But talk to us a little bit about what a current training block looks like, or what a week would look like for you.
So I have a full-time office job, so Monday to Friday I'm working all day, have evening calls, common for professionals in Asia. Also have a family at home, have a daughter, and like to be there for the bus stop drop off and home for dinner, bedtime stories. So to fit all of that in and then also do the training that you need to get in as a competitive runner, it's time management is a huge, it's just a constant struggle. So the way that I structure my week, I'm a high volume runner, so I like to get in an ideal week anywhere from 100 to 150 kilometers of running.
You're not just a high volume or a high elevation runner as well.
Yeah, right? Maybe anywhere from sort of 3,500 to 5,500 meters of elevation per week if I can. And the way that I do that is by run commuting. So my run to the office in the morning can be, depending on which route I take, anywhere from 10 to 15 kilometers, sort of call it an hour, hour and a half. That's on some hilly trails. And then I will do usually a bit of a shorter sort of version of that on the way home. So if I can get, an hour, 45 minutes or 2 hours total running each day in terms of going to and from work, by the end of the work week, that's 10 hours in the bank. You know, call it 90K. And then you get into the weekend. I'll do usually a long run on Sunday, maybe 3 hours, not too long, and then maybe an hour and a half on Saturday. And so 7 days a week running. A lot of those days are two-a-days. I think the doubling is a really effective training tool. One, to split up your runs in terms of where you can fit them in your schedule, but also you get a recovery cycle, a recovery period during the day. It's essentially two times in one 24-hour period where your body is getting some training stimulation and then the recovery for adaptation, and then you get back out there and you do it again. So it's your body going through that process twice in one day. You can also run your mileage at a slightly higher intensity, because instead of going out for a 2 hour slog, you're out for 2 1-hour runs. You can do those at a bit of a higher intensity and still manage the injury risk because you're separating them. So big fan of doubles, big fan of run commuting. But at the end of the day, it's for any athlete, they're also a person. They have their work and their family lives. You just need to find something that works for you, right? So you know, I don't think there's any one way to skin the cat. For me, I couldn't do it without the run commuting and the shorter sort of doubles, you know, mixed in throughout the week.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You do a maximum 3 hours as your long run as well.
Yeah.
So that kind of, I suppose, for running ultra, people, you need to be out there sort of 5-6 hours or more.
Yeah.
But but actually, like, there's lots of data that says to the contrary, like that actually, yeah, just if you, as long as the total volume in your week adds up, then
I think it is probably good to have at least 1 2.5-hour three-hour run per week. You do get some training adaptations from that sort of extra length over sort of the 2 hour mark, but really diminishing returns after about 3 hours. I think the only reason why you'd want to go beyond that for training is, one, if the way that you structure your week means that you just need the more volume, then that's fine. But also to practice sort of nutrition or gear, to do a bit of a dress rehearsal for a big race. You might want to know how your body's, feels after 5 or 6 hours of running. But to me, I'd rather have a B race, a 40 or 50K sort of race to kind of get into that sort of training zone instead of just going out for a 5-6 hour run on my own.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
And so would you, when you go out in the morning, are you going out completely fasted? Like, you won't have eaten or really had any drink or protein shake or anything in the morning? Or what would you typically do?
I'll mix it up. Sometimes I'll have a little bowl of yogurt before I go out the door. Sometimes I'll just go out with a coffee in my stomach and have something at the office. I think fasted runs are a nice sort of training tool. It can really sort of help your body get into the glycogen reserves and practice training a bit low, because it's just part of my everyday. I don't need to kind of get into that sort of deep into the well every single day. As I feel.
And most of these kind of run commutes you'll be doing at zone two, or are you like pushing, or do you vary them?
So that's a really good question. So in terms of my training week, it includes a long run, which will usually have a specific sort of mileage and elevation target, and sometimes a little bit of, a fast finish or a little bit of fast running sort of in the middle portion of it. And then I'll have two workouts during the week. So depending on what I'm training for, it might be two speed workouts, it might be two hill workouts or more.
So interestingly, you were a few years back, you actually, you've talked about the many different disciplines of running that you've done, Jeff.
Yeah.
But a few years back, you decided to take on a marathon race. What was the thinking behind that? I mean, obviously Hong Kong, it's all trails and all trail running, what persuaded you to go and put in a marathon block?
Yeah, so I had run a couple of marathons at that point, slower than I knew my ability. It was slower than what I thought I was capable of.
What times had you done previously?
It was a 3:59 was my first one. That was my first year of running, and then a 2:53 in Toronto. So I knew I could run faster. And every year when I'm planning out my race calendar, I usually put sort of one big sort of objective on the calendar. And that year in 2019, I thought, hey, this looks like a pretty good year to take another crack at the marathon. And Berlin, what a great place to go for a PB attempt. So I put that as sort of my A race for that year, and spent probably about 5 months preparing for the marathon. It was a big block. It worked with Andy to focus solely on road running, really built up sort of really, really big volume, some pretty intense workouts towards the end of that block, and everything just fell together sort of really well. So it was really happy with how it turned out. Ever since then, I haven't taken a crack at another road marathon, just knowing how much time it takes to do it well. COVID happened after that, so that was obviously put a spanner in the works for all of our goal setting. And then since then, I've kind of gotten back into the trail scene pretty hard.
Yeah.
And still some really sort of interesting challenges that I want to pursue in that area. So I'll go back to the roads again someday. But there's always a few other sort of competing priorities in terms of other things to do.
Well, you managed to get a 2:29, which is obviously really impressive. So that training block that you did for a marathon, you just cut out all trail running? So like you actually didn't go back to the hills at all during that period?
Essentially, that's right. I think I did one 15K trail race that I had kind of agreed to do for a friend. It was the Tiger's Head race in Hong Kong. But other than that, all of the training, all of the races. So I did some 5Ks and short road races to sort of fine tune the speed. But everything was done on the road, and it's really just trying to lock in that biomechanical efficiency, the high turnover, and just sort of building up your road form. And I think that it's the specificity that you get from just doing a high volume of just pure road running on the pavement does make you very efficient after a few months. It can actually take a little bit of time to get your trail feet back,
because
it is a little bit more sort of dynamic movements, and obviously sort of big climbs recruits different muscles, but I encourage all trail runners to take a serious a few months to do a marathon training block and get their PBs. And one of my friends, Peter Hopper from Gone Running, he was saying, Jeff, when you're old and talking to your grandkids around the fireplace about all your sort of running stuff, no one's gonna know what your North Face 50 time was but everyone will know what a 10K, a half marathon, a marathon PB are. So all runners should try to take a serious, honest effort at getting a proper PB at all those distances, and you don't even need to do it more than once, but every runner should get a PB at all the classic distances, and I agree with that.
Yeah, it's so funny you say that, because I'm like right in the middle of mine at the moment, and it's always the kind of litmus test, isn't it, of like how fast a runner, how good a runner you are, like what's your marathon time? And I've only ever run trails, and as you say, you can't I got this on this course, and that's actually what I love about it. Because actually it doesn't matter. Like it's actually, you just run what the course and the day and who,
That is one of the beauties of trail running, right? So it's not that one is better than the other, but I do think that runners can get into a little bit of training and racing monotony and just kind of going through the same thing every sort of season. And it's nice to break things up and just to sort of take 6 months to take a bit of a different challenge, you know, go to the track, you know, sign up for some, you know, 1500 meter, you know, time trials with mates. And that'll be just a totally different experience than if you're used to running hot 100K or 100 mile races. It'll make you a better runner, but it'll also just give you a little bit of a different, you know, exposure to a different side of the sport and maybe meet new people. And, you know, it's all one big community. So to me, I think it's really good for people to break out of those comfort zones and tackle a bit of that challenge. And they could always go back to what they love, you know, afterwards, but maybe they find a new part of the sport that they love as well.
Yeah. So true. And you were saying in that block, like, you got all of your PBs in that block. Your 5K is like 15 minutes and 10 seconds or something, isn't
it?
I mean, which just, like, it seems ridiculous to me,
but my road times are not sort of fast for road runners.
No,
but I think for a trail runner, it's handy to have a little bit of that speed. And I think for us trail runners, a lot of trail races have bits of pavement in them.
Yeah.
So you're not in the mountains the whole time. So it's good to be able to run a fast half marathon, because probably 20Ks of that 100K race are going to be on the road.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could say that actually your win at Asia Trail Masters in TMBT in Sabah, there was a few road sections which were had to be put in due to the course and due to the weather. And that the fact that you were able to have that training block on road would have helped you in that course.
Yeah.
And
it didn't hurt Hisashi too much either.
He's true.
He's pretty handy.
Yeah,
on the
he's
roads.
Pretty handy on the roads as well. Yeah. Look, Jeff, it's been amazing to have you on. What's the plan for the rest of the year? I remember when we last year had you on, like, it was sort of the beginning of the year was kind of planned out with Moon Trekker and then going to Hong Kong 100. What have you got for the rest of 2025?
So going to be back on the ATM circuit for the next few races, have the V Trail in Laos, as we spoke about earlier, and then Lantau 70, which is one of my favorite races in Hong Kong. It's such a classic race on Lantau Island.
That's in
end of March.
End of March. Yeah.
So that'll be a brilliant pleasure.
It's Jeremy Ritchie's race is like an absolute classic, isn't it?
Yeah. It's old.
Along with Oxfam Trail Walker and some of the North Face ones as well. It's like kind of like just part.
Yeah, it's been going on for forever and a day, and then I'll probably do a few other ATM races in the sort of late spring, early summer. The World Championships are in Spain this year. I'd love to run for Team Canada another time.
Have they tapped you up yet?
The selection process is, they make their decision in, I believe it's May.
Yeah.
So I'll throw my name in the hat and see what happens for that. Love to do that. And then ATM finals will be in Vietnam this year.
Just announced it, right?
In early October. So looking forward to that. See if I can defend my crown. It's not going to be an easy thing to do. That'll give me maybe a few months towards the end of the year to put something else in the calendar. Haven't quite decided on that. So it looks like it'll be just some trail running in a few different parts of the world for 2025. And I'm just looking forward to it. Nice to be sort of healthy and fit on the trails again.
I was just looking at so it's in Mukang Chai Ultra, which is just kind of north of Hanoi, like 4 or 5 hours north of Hanoi in October.
Yeah.
I think the distance is is it 75K or around?
They usually do that sort of catch distance, yeah, sort of between the 50 and 100K. So that seems to be what Chris has been going for the finals. And I think that's
a decent sweet spot for you as well, right?
And I think it's also fair. It doesn't sort of necessarily sort of favor the ultra long distance guys nor the sort of short distance specialists. And it'll really depend on the nature of the course. I've never run that particular race before. I've run up in that area of northern Vietnam, some beautiful mountains. It looks like they have some gorgeous rice paddies. I was looking at some of the photos. But also, it's just, it's such a unique format to have the championship final with, you know, probably 20 runners who are all capable of, on their day, winning the whole thing outright. That's always a special race.
I plan to be up there. I'm hoping I can be up there actually in the finals race. I think I'm going to try and represent Singapore. I'm going to try and get a few more races in. But it does say that there are technical jungle trail sections.
Yeah.
But the majority of the trails are quite runnable, subject to weather conditions, of course. But that sounds like it's right up your alley. It sounds like that could be a good cause for you to come and retain your title.
Well, we'll see. I'll definitely give it a crack. If nothing else, it looks like a spectacular bit of trail to go play on. Looking forward to it.
We did actually, when we met at in Sapa at VMM, we were kind of discussing, would you ever give four trails a go? And you were like, well, actually, at that point you were going to do the Translantau, and you're like, I've never done a miler before, which is like a prerequisite to be able to apply.
Yeah.
You're like, you were planning to do Translantau and then go and run another 30K or 40K after to be able to around Mui Wo to get the distance.
I had a pretty miserable Translantau. Stomach went, and but wasn't able to do the extra 30 kilometers after the finish that day as I had planned. So Four Trails is such an epic challenge. It's something that I would love to do someday. It's invitation only, so I would need to get tapped, and obviously need to get a miler in first. So as I said, there's so many different competing priorities in terms of what you want to accomplish in any given year, and we'll see. It's on the to-do list. I don't want to sort of put anything sort of hard in terms of when it'll happen, but one of these days.
Yeah. I think when we eventually see you go and run a miler, we'll be like, okay, he's got his eyes on it now.
That might be a good hint.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you've got like a part of the Joint Dynamics stable. I mean, obviously John and Ryan have both run it.
Yeah.
And it would be like, Ludo's just been so strong at the miler distance as well, isn't he, man? He's just a phenomenal athlete. I've been very, very impressed with how he's developed over the last few years.
But
it's a strong stable.
Absolutely, and actually, it's really helpful to have all these amazing athletes sort of around you. There's so much learning that goes in all directions, and just inspiring to have friends who are sort of as good at what they do as they are. So it's really cool.
Awesome, Jeff. Always a pleasure to catch up, mate. I will hopefully see you out on a race course at some point soon. Obviously, just at the start line, and then I can say goodbye. But mate, you've been you've been an inspiration. And one thing we haven't talked about this year, but one of the big reasons that we gave you the Endurance Asia Athlete of the Year last year was just the comeback. Like, because you started off the year with like a bad MCL injury from skiing, and just you'd started the year like almost a third of the way in.
Yeah.
But I think that for me, that's gone through injury, and for any athletes out there are going through bad injuries, that you can come back and you can come and have just a phenomenal year and be a better athlete off the back of it.
I'd recommend to any athlete who's going through one of those injury periods is just give yourself the opportunity to just take a bit of time off, take stock, do some goal setting, spend some time with your family, and then use that rest to come back, and build up your strength again slowly, and you're not going to be starting from zero. So just don't get too worried about it. As runners, we like to be active. We feel restless if we're not in our normal training routine. It's not as hard to build back once you have a bit of that foundation. So try to enjoy the downtime, and you'll be back to where you started in no time.
Yeah. You've proven it can be. Nice one, Jeff. Always a pleasure, sir.
All right. Thank you, Scott.
Tell the truthful story if they ever ask. Stop the complaining because things ain't that bad.
Mr. Chris Timms, welcome back on, sir. How are we doing?
Thank you, Scott. Great to be here. Lovely to see you and be back on the show.
Oh, man. So good to hear from Jeff. It's so good to be with him in person. And I actually got the chance to get out for a bit of a run with him on the Sunday evening. And then we caught up on the early Monday morning. And yeah, man, what a phenomenal dude. I mean, obviously, we gave him the Endurance Asia Male Athlete of the Year last year. Well deserved. But it's just really good hanging out with the guy. He's just got such great energy, right?
He really does. He has a an infectious personality. You know, you could just talk to him for hours. And, you know, the more you chat to Jeff, you realize he's a really intelligent guy. You know, you come away from a conversation with Jeff thinking about things, you know, really, really intelligent, lovely, lovely guy and top athlete as well.
I mean, we talked about I've been banging onto you, and I mentioned in the podcast around run commuting and the way that he thinks about his training block. I mean, he's obviously got Andy Dubois is his coach, but he's like really thinks about it in detail about how he's going to get all of his mileage. And he's a high mileage runner, like 120, 130, 140 plus kilometers a week with serious elevation. Like, he's putting in the miles, right?
He really is. His intent, you know, we talk intentionality, and Jeff, you know, methodical in everything he does. There's a purpose behind every session. He really, really does think it all through, and combining that with, you know, the outrageous VO2 max and the fact that he's a really competitive athlete, I think he's a really complete runner. You know, he's the full package. He's an intelligent guy that knows how to train. He knows how to race. Yeah, coupled with the fact that he's just a really lovely guy as well, I'm really pleased that, you know, and full, like you said, fully deserved of Athlete Performer of the Year.
And we caught up at the end around, and he was talking about the marathon block. And I think, like, you talk about doing a 2:30 marathon as like an ultra runner is like, it's so impressive considering that he's only started running in the last 10 years. So he was kind of like never experienced it before and then got straight into ultra running, but then to sort of do a block to be able to get a 2:30. I mean, that was a few years ago now, but it's interesting that that's kind of parlayed into these incredible performances on trail. And you and I are actually both training for Seoul right now, right? And it's in a couple of weeks, and it's been great training with you through this block, actually. Like, you've honestly really pushed me for a long time thinking about track, but just getting speed in the legs. And personally, I've been getting 5K, 10K PBs in just training runs now. And it's really like, kind of, you get the dopamine effect. I talked about it on the podcast, but like, yeah, you get this kind of like positive reinforcement of like, shit, I'm getting faster. But this is actually going to be, because you've got some incredible times, but actually your marathon time is actually, you haven't done a sub-3 before, which like blows my mind.
Yeah, I've never really tried, you know, just to go back a bit there, Scott, about, you know, me, you and Jeff, we've got, there's a lot of similarities there, although Jeff is a hell of a lot quicker than both of us. You know, we're all the same age. We've all got into running relatively late. And I know we've done other things, we played, but, you know, and what that means, a couple of things. One, the kind of addiction of getting faster with age, reversing the aging process, if you like. But the other one is we've not got years worth of thousands of kilometers in our legs with, you know, overuse injuries. We're coming into this pretty fresh. And yeah, you know, to your point, I've never done a fast marathon really, because I've never really trained for marathon properly. I love the short distance stuff on the track up to maybe 5K on the road, and then 50K plus. They're my kind of sweet spots. And historically, I've always hated that 21K marathon. Like that zone is just not an enjoyable place for me to be. But back to Jeff, like he's a complete runner. You know, if we, I think we were talking about, you know, I know we've run the Falcons kind of together, but we, one of the names that we were talking about at the beginning was 360, a 360 degree runner. What is that? And for me, that's someone who can run a 1500 meter super fast. It's someone that can translate that into 5K, half marathon, full marathon, and beyond. And Jeff and Fuzhou, by the way, if we're talking about complete runners, he translates speed into the and that's quite a unique, you know, if you let's just say we stack Jeff up against all of the runners he competes against, you know, Stingray included, and we put them over a week, multiple distances, Jeff would outperform all of them, I would hazard a bet, because he focuses on each of his ranges, really. He's methodical about that as well. He does the speed work, he does the tempo, and he does the long stuff. But yeah, outstanding stuff, real inspiration.
Yeah, it's interesting when he was talking about his marathon training block, though. He's so like he had very religious training regime that and plan that Andy had put together, and he actually only did road. And one of the things you've been doing and I've been trying to do is actually keep in some. We've got this kind of like rundulation, which I think we need to TM. But yeah, just getting that like run with consistent undulation and consistent like flowy road. Which and if you can do it at zone two, then. It's kind of good as a like zone two running within a marathon training block, but I think it just means that we'll be able to keep that when we get back to trails. Because I think Jeff said actually after doing the marathon block, transitioning back to trails actually took a bit of time because it was kind of like different running economy and just different focus. But I think like the block that we've had together, I think is and how we've been focusing, I think we'll be able to parlay it quite easily onto some trail races coming up.
Yeah, I think so. I think the rundulation is a, I think we could, it's definitely copyright for us, that one. But for me, that is just about kind of getting some hills in, being able to find kind of elevation easier, you know, being able to run it. And I remember kind of thinking this on the climb, Jeff and I kind of the climb back at the ATM finals last year, that big, there's a, like an 11 kilometer stretch at that dirt track. It's where
Right at the end, right? And we talk. I listened back to the podcast where I got him on at the finish, and before I recorded with him, I was like, "Let me just recollect that race." And yeah, that was when he was like, he had cooked himself, and he was just clinging on for that last 11K, looking over his shoulder consistently for Hisashi Kitamura like to
And he
come
nearly
and
caught
try
him.
and
That's
catch
where
him.
Kitamura nearly got him. But when I look back at the segments, you know, I managed to run all of that, and I would never be able to do that if I wasn't training the kind of the zone two hill work that we're doing. So yeah, it's just for me, that's just about getting some hill work in with the, you know, building that aerobic base, because historically, I think I've always focused a bit too much on the speed work. But yeah, Jeff is a, and if you look at a lot of Jeff's runs, actually, Jeff does it without realizing it. He's, you know, you look at his commute. He lives in a hilly place. You know, Hong Kong is full of hills. So if you look at his typical kind of commute runs, he's getting it in without even be intentionally putting it in, you know. So yeah, it's good stuff. He's an inspiration. He's certainly kicked me into action. I've looked at his training. I chatted with him when we raced together in Pren, and he's really kind of raised the bar for a lot of people this year, actually, me included. So yeah, top man, Jeff.
Yeah, and he also has aspirations of retaining his Asia Trail Master Championship win from last year. They ju Chris Vanderveld just announced the final for 2025. It's going to be back in Vietnam again at Mukang Chai, which is kind of close to Sapa. It's about 4 to 5 hours northwest of Hanoi. And in October, sort of like mid October this year, so it's great that that's been announced. And there's been a few other updates on the Asia Trail Master scene. So obviously, Jeff's on his way to V Trail this weekend, which is happening on Saturday. But there's also we've got unfortunately Tiemann's not going to be going ahead, but they've got Penang, which is going to be happening in April, towards the end of April, I think 26th. I think. Are you going to be running it? Actually, I forgot to confirm with you whether you're.
Yeah, yeah. We're I think we're going together on that one, aren't we? You booked your flight today.
I've already booked my flights. I'm away. Yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm going to like in and out, just go and smash it and smash and grab and then get back. I've never been to Penang before. You've actually trained there a little bit, actually.
It's you know what? It's a really great place to train and race. Technical. There's some really technical trails there, but there's also some runnable stuff as well. But yeah, it's a great. I mean, you've got the whole central part of Penang is essentially a kind of forest mountain with a trail network that spans the length of the island. So yeah, I'm guessing the trails they use a lot of the similar trails there as the Penang Eco. And mate, it's gonna be a good race that. But thinking about who's gonna be there, you never know whoever's there on
No,
the day.
he's going to turn up. It's
Yeah.
only a 50K, so I mean, it's much more your kind of distance. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to be saying goodbye to you at the start line, but I think there'll be a. There's a. I forget his name. English guy that's based there as well that you've gone and trained with in Penang.
Alex Tilley.
Alex Tilley, right? Yeah,
Yeah.
he's done phenomenally well in a lot of
Yes.
the ATM races, right? So I'm sure he'll obviously is his home
He will.
stomping
It's
ground.
his back garden, mate. It's his
I
back
quite. I look forward to racing him because I always see his performances. I'm like, wow, he's impressive. So I look forward to racing with him. But that'll be fun. I've actually just signed up for another race. I don't think I told you, but I'm in San Francisco in May, and there's a the Quicksilver Endurance Run, which is a qualifier for Western States. So I've just like
Wow.
I'm there for work, and I'm just gonna.
Mate.
But the 100K is the qualifier. But I've got to get a flight. Straight after. So I'm only going to do the 50K, but I'm going to go and smash that. And I think back to the like us doing a marathon block, I think it's actually really good like then like going into a 50K race from getting some speed in the legs. Maybe more so for the race in San Francisco, because I think the one in Penang is going to be a little bit more technical trail, right? It's going to be a bit more jungle trail. So might not be quite used to it. But yeah, it's going to be a good couple of months of racing. Have you got anything else planned actually after Penang?
Nothing. I'm trying to have a year of just trying to focus on kind of big things, So like Seoul, obviously, I'm trying not to look too far past Seoul. I'll do the Penang race, but not as an A race really. But just trying to race a little bit less this year. I would love, just to see how, can I clock a PB at marathon this year? Can I get it at half? Maybe 10K. I want to do UTSG. That looks fun. I haven't decided whether I'm going to do the 50 yet or the 35, but yeah, nothing really big this year yet, Scott, to be honest. But more of a, I think it's very, I had a big year last year and I had a big year the year before, and I think it's really, really hard when we get to 40, 43, to kind of race big every year. So this year is more of a kind of structured, a few big races. Maybe with a ramp it up a bit when I go to the next age category at 45 plus, but nothing major. But Seoul, a PB at Seoul would be really nice. I can't wait. The weather, it's one of them when you sign up. Singapore's boiling hot, isn't it? It's baking hot, and we say this all the time. If you can run here, you can run everywhere, but anywhere. But the worry is it's going to be a bit too cold. What is it, 10 degrees at the moment there?
Yeah, it's like 2 and 10 is the is the Celsius is the temperature that's predicted. Man, I think your PB at the moment is like 302 or 304, so
306 in
306.
Singapore though. That's a sing in Singapore.
It's a okay. Well, that's like a sub three anywhere else in the
Yeah.
world. So it's not, and I think mine's like 330 in Singapore or something,
You're gonna smash it.
335. So
You're gonna
I
smash
think both of us have got a chance to just lay down a good time. And for me, I'm still thinking, oh, like do a good one, and then I'm kind of done from the road marathon. But if you get a Boston qualifying time, I don't know. Like, I think I'd need to get 255 or 258 or something for that. To I think actually the numbers like I forget what the exact number is,
It's
but it's
higher.
always a lot lower than to be
Yeah, I
able
think our
to.
age category is perhaps three hours plus, just over 3 hours, I think. I'm not sure.
Yeah, or 3:05 or something. But it's always like I think it ends up sort of like about 5 minutes less or
5 minutes
something. So
less, it does.
we'll see. I mean, I think. I go back to the reason of like the why I do this and what I'm passionate about. And really, it's about being in the hills and being in the outdoors and in the
Yeah.
mountains and running around streets. I do
I
that because
love
I
it.
have to train. but it's not why I do it. And so I just wanted like focus on that, and sort of like keep that.
Jeff agrees with this as well. I had a good chat with him about this over a beer, you know, a good marathon block. Yeah, there's some transitional work needed to be done back into the trails, but a good quality fast marathon block sets you up for 50, you know, 50K. If it's 100K, the speed, you know, you just build a distance up then and it really gives you a good platform. So I can guarantee you, you take that soul training into ultra and it's gonna, you know, it's really gonna take your performances, anyone's performances, up another level. And we're finding that you know, you're running 5K PBs every week at the moment, just as a tempo run, right?
No, I was like, I did a 10, doing 10K as like just a track threshold session. And I'm like but I mean, it's, that goes to show that I'm not a fast runner and haven't been running fast, but need to do a 10K time trial and like see what it is proper and suss it out. But Mr. Chris Timms, always a pleasure to catch up with you, sir. Look forward to hanging out with you in Seoul in a couple of weeks. We'll actually record we'll probably record a podcast straight after straight after the race as well, like to have a bit of a recap from it as well. Because I think, you know, a lot of the people that listen to the podcast and are like generally trail runners. And I think a lot of people are like us that don't necessarily race road. But it'll be good to sort of hear how we survive it. It's a very different discipline. And I'm excited about it. I'm excited to see how it plays out.
Me too, man. I actually got to go out and run now. What was it, 9 o'clock? I've got to go and do my easy run tonight. I need to go and get out in a minute, mate. So all roads to Seoul at the moment. But lovely to see you, buddy.
Impressive stuff. Get it done, Mr. Timms. Nice one, sir. Speak soon.
All right, see you soon, mate.
Cheers.
Tell the truthful story if they ever ask. Stop the complaining because things ain't that bad.